Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Hello, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf, Nida Chav Zayin. We are holding three lines off the top. We had a chiddush yesterday that when there is a shilya, placenta, embryonic sac, which comes following a birthing experience, if that birthing experience was a viable, healthy birth, then this placenta, this shilya, even 10 days later, is attributed to that birth, and we don't suspect that there was another offspring present. In fact, Amar Rab Bar Shilo, Amar Masna, he quotes Amar Shmuel Masa. Here comes the story of the Tau. They attributed Esa Shulya, this Shulya that came later, they related it back to the birth that happened, you know, way back with Vlad. Ad Asara Yamin. Until, you know, 10 days later. Vilo Yamro. However, the Gemara continues. The only way we can do that is if it followed the blood. Lo yamru toilen. When do we relate it to the blood? Ela b'shulya haba achar havlad. If it follows the blood. Rashi says, as opposed to if it came first. Shulya came out on Sunday and the blood a week later. Then we're concerned that perhaps the shulya represents another blood, and she has to account for it in her, you know, tum account. Here comes another story. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Be'yechanan, Ma'ase. I'll tell you about a story. V'tolu es ha-shulya b'vlad. They attributed the shulya back to the vlad, even though it was 23 days later. Ad chav gimel yamim. Amar l'Rav Yosef, Reis of Turntim, he says, when you told us, you said 24. Ad chav dal d'amerslan. First, him say perhaps he meant 23, you know, not full, like it was 23 plus a couple of hours. He called it 24, so it's really one and the same thing. Amar Av Ach, Breder Aviro, similar story. Amar Av Yitzchak. Amasa, this time it wasn't a Vlad with a Shilya following. These were two twins. Masa v'nishtahe, Havlad achachaveri, lamad gumun yoyim. This was a story that one twin lingered after his companion. 33 days later he was born. Amar Av Yosef. So Rashi told him, well, once again, I just have to correct you. Lama Dalad Amraslan, you told us 34, not 33. Ask the Gemara, how could you have such a gap between the two members? Hanicha Lamanda Omar, you led us on Tisha. You led us on good time. How's it possible to have 33 days between births? We know that Anisha could give birth, healthy birth, either in her 7th or her 9th time of the Gemara. Those are the only 2 months where it would be viable. Now, there's a difference of opinion about a Ledes Letisha. So all agree that if it's a 7th month birth, then it could be even partial. It doesn't have to be a full 7 months. 6 and a bit can work. But what about a 9 month full-term pregnancy? Does it have to be full 9 months or even eight and a bit? Hanicha l'manda amar Ledes Letisha, Ledes Mkutoin. Mkutoin means a partial month. So if you say that 9 can mean 8 plus, so this could have happened. You could have one baby at the end of month 7, the next one at the beginning of month 9. So it's 33, 34 days in between, and they're both healthy and fine. Mishkachasli, you could have it. Echad nigmut rasa yusef shiva, right? The first one was formed, was completed at the end of 7, born then. And the next one delayed until the beginning of the 9th. He completed his, you know, formation. And he came out beginning of the 9th. If you say that 9 means full 9, then you can't have this configuration. If 9 means a full 9, not partial, Michael, how could you have two babies being born in this fashion? Because if the 9 month had to be full 9 months, go back 33 days, we're now in the middle of the 8th, and you can't have a healthy birth if it's just in the 8th. Says the Gemara, inevitably you have to fix up the numbers here. Eifach Shmaitza will switch around the sayings. We had a story about the Shulya delaying 23 days, and then we have the story of the Vlad laying 33 days. That's such a ramp. Evok Shmaitz, I'm giving the show you, but the show you was a 33-day wait. By the twins, Chav Gimel, the Vlad, but the Vlad was only 23 days. Okay, now that works, because they could both have been born during the 7th. One beginning, one the end, with just 23 days in between. Amar of Avin, Bar of Ado, Amar of Menachem, Ish, he came from Kfar Sha'arim, Bar Mila, some say from Beis Sha'arim. Let me tell you a first-hand story about this type of phenomenon. Masa, if you think 30 days or 23 days is extreme, here comes the story of a 3-month wait between the two twins. And guess what? It's not just some story. It's right here, alive and well in front of us. And the two twins are sitting before us in the Beis HaMedrash. Who are they? One is Yehuda. One is Chizkia, they are Bnei, the sons of Rabbi Chiya. Ask the Gemara, how could that happen? How could an Isha become pregnant and again pregnant again? The Gemara is assuming two separate conceptions. V'amar Ma, we learned, Ein Isha Misaberes. Once an Isha becomes expectant, she can't conceive another one. V'chayzeres Umisaberes a second. So how could this have happened? Amar Abai, no, it was the same conception. Tipa Achas, one droplet, Hoysa was. V'chalklishnaim got split into two meaning. The same process generated twins simultaneously. And in terms of their development, one took longer than the other. Echad nigmor tzurasa b'tchilas zayin. One member of the twin family was completed beginning of month 7. The other one, 3 months later, echad b'seif tes. Okay, sholi b'vayis habayis tome. Back to the Mishnah. So the Isha sheds a sholya. Anything in that room, anything that bites under that same roof as tummy, that's like a mace. Like a human who passes, it's metame, anything in the oil. And the shulia has that same status. The question is, why does the placenta give off tumor? It's not a person. Tumor abonon. Shulia bebais abayis tummy. No, don't think for a second. Loisha shulia itself is considered a vlad. No, of course not. Loshena shulia believe loshenim of vlad. It's just because the assumption is that in the shulia there was a vlad, which, you know, now disintegrated and came apart, and you can't discern it, but it was there at birth. So you have a dead human being, and it's metame. She'ein sholya, she'ein vladim. Devei Rabbi Meir, that's his opinion. However, Rabbi Yosi, ve'i Rabbi Yehuda, ve'i Rabbi Shimon retire, and they say it's okay. Why? Here goes. Amrulay, they turn to Rabbi Meir. Why are you giving tumah to this entity? It's already been disrupted, disintegrated, and became bottle here in the other liquids. Yeah, Tamid, wouldn't you agree? Let's say Shemitziu b'seivel b'zachitza. Let's say this material, the shulya, whatever it has in there, which was in this container, this seifel, this bucket, was taken out to the other room, the outer room. And along the way, it was sort of swooshed around. And Shehutar, wouldn't you agree that it's tohar? Because it lost its formation, it became bottle in the other liquids. Wouldn't you agree? Of course, he says, Amarlan Aval. Yes, right on, of course. Velamay, why? So they asked him, you know, so why would you be okay with that? He says, Levisha Eine, because by the time it gets out there, it lost its formation, it disintegrates. Amarlay, so they told him, same thing. Shame, Shane, and Babai Sachit, just like you agreed that once you take him outside, the movement, the swooshing would disintegrate him and dissolve him and nullify him, the surrounding liquid. Kach einoi b'vayis ha'pnim, likewise. He doesn't exist, even in the first room, because he became bottled in the other waters. Amarlan, he says, no, big difference. Yeah, when you're carrying him around and you swoosh him around, then he disintegrates and becomes nullified. But initially, at birth, he's still intact to the point that he could be metame. Omar lehen ein odem, you can't compare nimuk pam achas, a one-time, somewhat, you know, disintegration at birth. I agree, there's some sort of, but it's still enough intact. Nimuk based pam versus being swished around, you know, twice, once initially, and then when you carry him, transport him outside. So I agree that later on, of course, he's butter, but initially, there's sufficient form there to be considered a vlad a human entity, which is Metame. Yosef Rapapa, on a similar note, we have a story. Rapapa was sitting Achori behind the Rav Baby, and he was sitting Kamei the Rav Amnon. Yosef Ka'amar, Rapapa was saying over, my time with Rabbi Shimon, what's Rabbi Shimon's reason to absolve the Shulia of Tumma? He says like this, Kol Savar, he holds Kol Tumma Shinus Arab Mimin Acher Batlo. He says, any Tumma, such as in this case where you need to have it intact, you need to have a pure fetus material. So if it's unpure, shinus arba mimin acher, if any other type of material gets mixed in with it, like the blood of the leida there, bitela, it becomes nullified, loses its status. And this, of course, is unique to mace-related type of tumas. See, the Farshim explain that the kasha really was that we find a similar tumma that relates to a mace. Even after disintegration, you have something called rekev, netzel, different materials, you know, spoilages and the consumption, you know, material, which is metame. So, fine, I understand the navel here is sort of dissolved, but it's still a full fetus in there. So he says, look, but if it lost its pristineness, its purity, it's mixed in with other materials, then it loses that status. It's only tummy while fully, you know, alone, without any other mixture. Okay, that was his reason. You see, it's not really a basar of mace. That could be metami, a kazayis. You gotta have the full mace, and you gotta have it pure mace, without any other ingredients mixed. In fact, we'll see later, Shimon holds that by the rekev as well, decomposed material, where the halacha is that a spoonful of it is metame, it has to be pure, it can't be mixed with others, some similar fashion. Once there's a mixture, it's tar. Amar lahu, Rapapa. So Rapapa added, Hainu nami atamayu de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. So now I get the other opinion as well. You know, there was Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, all on the same position that this Shulia is Tahar. Once we figured out Rabbi Shimon's reasoning, I presume it's their reasoning as well. Achichole. So he was chuckled at. His companions were like, of course, well, why even may I? It's obvious, right? Maishno. Why would you differentiate between the different reasons of the Tanaim Pshita? Of course, they're in the same position. Of course, it's based on the same reason. Why even mention? Rapapa. So Rapapa says, I'm not gonna take it as an insult, the fact that they chuckled at me. You know what? I'd rather embarrass myself and, you know, achieve clarity in Torah, even at my own expense. Rapapa, afilu ki amilso. Even to say, you know, a statement like this, which can trigger chuckling responses, lema inish, one should get up and be brave about it. Go ahead and say it. You know, to achieve clarity in Torah, it's worth it. V'lenishta kami rabbi, rather than keeping silent in front of a rabbi, and not getting that clarity that you need. Shem shenemar, as the pasuk says, one sacrifices his prestige for Torah, Hashem will elevate you. Mida keneged mida. You gave up, Hashem will give you more. Shnamar nevalta. Loshnav nevela. You degrade yourself. For the understanding of Torah, be isna say, Hashem will elevate you, and you'll truly understand and reach the depths of Torah. But vim zamoisa, yad zamoisa. But if you muzzle yourself and you remain silent, right? The mission says, loy habay shalomit. The person's shameful and not going to be aggressive to understand. He can't. You're not going to get there, right? So vim zamoisa, if you muzzle yourself, yad lape. Eventually, you're not gonna have your hand on your mouth. People will ask you. You're not gonna have clarity. So it's worth it. It's worth my while to embarrass myself, to degrade myself, in order to achieve clarity. So that's why I made this extra point, this mention of this extra point, which really you would think it's just obvious, but I wanted to make sure that is to confirm it. Says the Mu'azab Shimon Tamei, and Rav Shimon, who in this case says, if there's anything else mixed in, it's loses its status of Tumah, is very consistent with his own opinion regarding a similar matter, where the mixing nullifies its status, asanya. Maloy tarvad rekav. You have a tarvad, a big spoon, filled with rekav, decomposed, you know, mace material, which is metame, Rashi says. This shiur is metame, lochel mishmi sinai. And let's say a little granule of dirt dropped in there, so it's no longer pure. Still have the same amount, but there's another element mixed in. Shanavala toichoi offer kolshu, a little offer fell in there. Rabbi Tame, Tanakama says it's still tame, look, it still has its shiur. Nothing changed, despite the addition of this fire and matter. For Rabbi Shimon, no, metayer. My time to Rosh Hashem, why? Amar Rabbi, Ashkechasinu, the Rabbanan by Rabbi encountered the Talmidim of Rav Yeshiva, and they were sitting and explaining it. The Aspika Amri, they're sitting and saying like this. Because when that dirt falls in, we can assume that it's going to now surround a droplet, a granule of the rekav, which will now be bottled in the greater amount of dirt that's surrounding it. So you lost that granule. And you diminished the shear required for tumah. Yevshar. You can't say shalai yirgush de pray this offer. Two granules of offer will now overwhelm. I'll pray the achashol rekav, the single granule of rekav. Right, that they surround, that they, now you're missing a granule of rekav. I mean, I responded to him, Adrabba, why are you going this way? Why are you saying the two granules of offer will overwhelm one? Maybe the other way around. Adrabba, it's the opposite. The Efshel Yibush, they pray this as rekav. I'll pray that, we turn to base. I'll pray the Achash shall offer. If you never say shiur, if anything, you have more than you started with. Because, look at it the other way. And Parshim explained, because in the totality of things, you have more rekav, you have a huge spoonful of rekav. So look at the totality of it and say, look, this little bit of offer that fell in was not overwhelmed by surrounding, well, the Gemara says that the two, you know, granules next to it overwhelm it because they're part of the greater, you know, quantity present in the container, and that will overwhelm the offer. Now you have more than you started with. It becomes nullified to the greater quantity, to the rekav, which basically increases the volume of your rekav. And obviously, shiur, yeah, more than you started with. Elam Rabba. Okay, Rabba says, I'm not going to go with this reason, because this reason can be applied both ways. Hanei Tamei Rabbi Shimon, I'll explain to you why Rabbi Shimon absolves the rekav due to the fire material. Soifai ki tchilasai. He holds it just like tchilasai, way back when this spoilage process began, there's a halacha that, you know, the rekav has a precondition. If you want rekav to be metame, eventually when it turns into rekav, so initially, it has to be a pure burial. Just the mace himself, just his skin, but not any other cloths and materials and coffins, because once that's present, that gets mixed in and it's no longer a pure decomposure process, in which case the rekav will not be metame. That's the aloha. See, all just like initially, when the process begins, it has to be purely mace material. Likewise, at the end of the road, when you have the pure rekav, it only has tumah if it maintains its purity, as opposed to having others mixed into it. That is Reb Shimon's reason for absolving it from tumah. How many times did Reb Shimon say ve kitchilos at the end of the process, like the beginning? Matchilos, just the initial start of the process. Nasal edava achar. If there's any other matter, it becomes for it egan giloin, a challenger. Rashi says emevatel. It's emevatel. Disrupts it. You can't have any other materials in there. Safia, likewise, at the end of the process, when you have pure rekav, but if something else gets imported into this mix, nasalei debracha, this other material become gan giloin, disrupt it, and terminate its tumah. Mai. So what do you mean, initially, it needs to be pure, the sani of a brisa? So all agree to this, even the Rabbanan, that the initial process has to begin pure mace, ezeo mace, sheishlei rekav, which mace has it in a rekav, and which one does not? Veizeo mei sheinli rekav. It depends. Nikba arin, barin shal shayish, or yalgav yirisu shal avonim. So if he was buried without any shrouds in a stone coffin, barin shal shayish, stone, you know, marble, yalgav yirisu shal avonim, or on a stone floor where there's no risk of getting mixed in with other, you know, disintegrating materials. This mace eventually, when he spoils, has din of rekav, which is metame. But if there are other particles present, which will get mixed in, which mace does not have din of rekav, the grub is susai in his clothing, or in a wooden coffin, which eventually will rot and disintegrate, it will be on top of a floor of blocks, of bricks, which will eventually, you know, disintegrate. And, you know, we'll have some powder, some, you know, particles mixed in. In this case, there's no rekiv. Furthermore, the din of rekiv only applies to one who dies naturally. The muti harug as opposed to one who's killed, where there's some blood lost in the process. It's not a full mace. It's not entitled to a din of rekiv. Okay, so we've sort of went from one to the other. We started with the halacha, the shilya, which according to Rishim is not metame because of the fire material that's mixed in, and we sort of compared it to the case of the tarvod, where there's other material mixed in, which is also not metame. But the Gemara now tells us it's because there's a unique requirement for the rekiv. Soifa kitchilasa. And based on this new understanding, it's a bit hard to understand the comparison. Why would he apply a similar rule to the Shulya? Shulya is a whole different system. By Rekav, we say it has to be pure, beginning to end. But the Shulya? Why would we need that type of precondition? So the more later we'll discuss this. But first, let's sort of conclude this discussion about the Rekav. Good, let's go back to the halacha mentioned before. Maloi tarvat Rekav, the spoonful of Rekav, shenafal techa efakashu, which imported some sort of other material, tamei. Still maintains his tumah because the shear is still there. Reb Shimon Matir. Okay, another halacha which is very similar, which is subject to the same machlokas. Mloy tavad rekav. This amount of rekav is pazer bayis, which now fell throughout the bayis. So it's all over the floor, and there's some, you know, interaction with the soil on the floor, but it's throughout the bayis. Habayis tameh. Still, look, the rekav is still there, somewhat through the house, somewhere in the house, and the ceiling, the roof, is now hovering over a requisite shear of a rekiv, despite the fact that it's dispersed throughout the house and lying on the floor. Reb Shimon Matir says, no, it's tar. Because, again, there is offer mixed in. So you think it's pretty much a repetition. This halach and the previous, why mention both? Utsricha, both are needed. Each one has an element unfound in the other. The Yashmina Kamaisa. If only for the first halacha of the offer that drops into the spoonful, by Hikam Rabbanah, I would say over there the Rabbanah maintained its tumah b'shem michna because it's contained in one, you know, avon espaza. But if it's dispersed throughout the, you know, the floor of the house, maybe that's worse. Ema moedu loy the Reb Shimon, perhaps they would agree to him. In this case, the ein ma'ahil v'chayzer ma'ahil, you can't have the roof hovering over one drop here, one drop there. It doesn't connect. It doesn't combine into one transmitter of tumah, especially since it's all sort of interacting with the soil and getting mixed. On the same token, if we only discuss the second case, I would perhaps theorize, only in this case, Amar Shimon, V'yashmina b'ha, and if we only discussed the case of, of the dispersed rekiv, I would say, b'ha amar Reb Shimon. Only in this case, Reb Shimon says that it's tar. Why? Because it's all throughout the house, doesn't combine into one entity. The ein ma'ahil b'chayzer ma'ahil, the oil all over the place cannot just combine with each other. Two separate, you know, acts of hovering. So you can't have one, it's not one, you know, unified, combined entity that could be transmitting to him. Aval b'ha, but in the case where it's sitting in a spoon, okay, who cares? A bit of offer mixed in. Ema, I can perhaps suggest, Moidil Rabbani, we read the Rabban in this case, that it's Tom Tam Yitzricha. Hence, we need both halachis, both scenarios, that both opinions are maintained, irrespective of the configuration, whether it's in a spoon together or dispersed throughout the house. In both cases, Rabban say it's Tom Tamay. Rav Shimon says, look, there is fire and matter mixed in. Especially if it's dispersed throughout the matter, the fire matter, the floor in the house, for sure it's going to be No longer the time. Tanidach. Another note on the same topic. Mloy tarvat void. Here you have more than the requisite shear. You have a mloy tarvat plus of the dirt in the of the caver of a Beis HaKfaris. Tell me. According to Rabbanon, it's still going to have tumah. Farshim explained that was speaking that we know that there were shrouds there, there were other material, but if it's more than the required shear, so that allows for a little wiggle space, so we know that we can deduct for the foreign matter, and you still have, you'll still remain with the required shear for the of the rekiv. Rabbi Shimon once again is mitayer due to the presence of foreign matter. My tamei de Rabbanon, why do Rabbanon apply tumah? Fishi efshar lemaloi tamei be'oi, because since you have more than this year, you have a tavet void of a Beis HaKfaris. Can't be that there is no shame by mili tavet brekev. Even when you discount for the foreign matter, you're going to be left with a shiur of rekev. And therefore it's mitzvah, despite the fact that there's a mixture going on. So this is sort of a recurring theme or repetition over and over that the machlekes, in the case of the tavet brekev, which has foreign matter, is that Reb Shimon is metayr, chama metayr. Metami. Okay, once we established that reason, the seifik tchilasa reason, hash the armas. Now you've explained to me time the Reb Shimon. Why does Reb Shimon discount this from tumah? Mishum seifik tchilasa, because the conclusion has to match the initiation of the process. And as we explained, just like initially, if the mace is contained in a, you know, some sort of disintegrating entity, tachrichem or arin, that discounts the whole rekev, you know, tumah possibility. Likewise, ultimately, at the end, when you have pure rekev, but if there's something mixed in, that disrupts it as well. Okay, that's good and well by the rekev, but back to our sugya. We have a shulya. Shulya is not rekev. Shulya is a mace. It's an actual fetus in there, which is now a mace. Why is it not matami kondor b'shimon? Gabi shulya maitaima. Why would b'shimon absolve that of tumah? Om Rabbi Yechna, so we have Rabbi Yechna, we have b'shimon mishlokish. Amr b'Yechanan, very simply, because it's batal, became nullified in the greater quantity of surrounding liquids. Amr b'Yechanan mishum bitul b'roib nagubo. It's based on bitul b'roib, because once the fetus disintegrates, we assume it happened sort of before it came out. That's it. It lost its status. It became batal in the other liquids. Va'azda, Rabbi Yechanan tameh, and b'Yechanan is consistent with his own opinion stated elsewhere. Amr b'Yechanan. In fact, he tells us that Rabbi Shimon and also Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, they're both on the same track based on the bittul b'roiv concept. Rabbi Shimon Hadamar, as we just explained, that the vlad inside became bottle. Rabbi Elazar, what do we find in the Sanya? This nun, we had it back in the Bechiris, if you remember. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we have a large, heavy animal, a cow, right? She spit out, she shed this blood clot. Is it considered a vlad? This is her first time, Rashi says. Is this considered a b'chor? How is it to cover? Yeah, you gotta bury it. You have to bury it as though it has kedusha, and the next offspring is not a b'chor, because she already had the, you know, the first birth. But the charer is done. B'tan Rebchia, Allah, he explained on this halacha, you should know that the charera, even though you're burying it, but it doesn't have tumah. Einam etamali b'magali masi, you touch it, you carry it, there's no tumah. Ask the Gemara, how could you have it both ways? Either it's an offspring or it's not. If it is, it has tumah. If it's not, then it's discounted regarding b'chira matters as well. U'me'achar, since she'einam etam, it doesn't exhibit tumah le b'magali masa, might take cover. First of all, why do you have to bury it? It's not a vlad. It's just sort of a discharge. Could they lefaras ma'ashib tumah b'chira? The reason is because we want everybody to know, to publicize that this was in fact a real experience, and it absolves the next offspring from Bechor. This is the Peter Recha. Am Avad Malanihu. Okay, so apparently it has true blood status. So back to the question, so why is it no tumah? How could you have it both ways? Why does he teach us that there's no tumah? Answer is like this. Sure, it counts as a blood. Sure, it has status. It's Peter Rechem. And the next offspring is not a Bechor. Why is there no tumah? Because it lost its tumah by way of disintegration and bittul. Om Rabbi Yechonu Mishum bittul b'roiv. No gobo. Rashi explains, Michui ha-nefel, the disintegrated fetus, became batal b'dam, in the blood. So he holds that if it lost its configuration and sort of disintegrated and mixes it with the other stuff, it becomes batal b'roiv, like Rav Shimon holds in our sugya, and that's why there's no tumah by the shulya, despite having contained the blood, but is no more as batal. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, despite the lack of tuma, because of the bittul factor, but the mother is considered to be a birther, and she has to do the tumas later count. Amar Usaba, this elder scholar tells the Rabbi Ami, Azbilach. So you just quoted Rabbi Yechanan. Let me explain to Rabbi Yechanan's reason. Time of the Rabbi Yechanan, the Amakot, the Pasuk says that even this type of experience will trigger tumas later. Ishok says, Rabbi Yaldo Zachar. We learn that even if the vlad looks like zera, it's just disintegrated, you know, liquid. Afilo yoda el kenshi isriya, she just charges something which appears like the zera which she had received initially. Tumei leida, she's tumei leida, meaning it's efficient to trigger the whole tumas leida. Okay, so we had so far two reasons why Rav Shimon absolved the shulya from tuma. Initially, we spoke about lack of purity, and we compared it to the Mloi Tavra Derekev, which needs to be reminiscent of the initial stage, pure, without any other ingredients. Yeah, but that only worked for the Rekev, which has that requirement, but by the Shulya, why do you need that? So Rabbi Yechanan offered a reason, Bittul B'roiv. Here comes Rish Lakish, Amar. He says, Shafir, Shatarfu b'meimav nasa kemeis nizbalbala tzurasa. He says, just like we find elsewhere, let's say when a mace gets burnt, so it's no longer a basar, it's still matame. Lachy is if it's fully intact, if it has its tzura intact, it's still matame. In a similar note, said Rish Lakish, a fetus will only be matame if it retained its formation. But this sphere, this fetus here, inside the shulya, shetarfu b'meimav, which was rinsed with water, with its water, Rashi says, either it was washed, you know, with plain water, or with its own, you know, birthing liquid. So basically, fact is that it got swished around during the process, and because of its fragility, the fact that it's so delicate, nasa kemes shenis bal b'tzuras, like a mes lost its tzura. So its form got disrupted, and it no longer has mace status. And again, we're speaking about a fetus which doesn't really have bus or a share of kazayas. The only way to attribute tumah to it is if it's fully, it presents as a full mace entity with its proper tzura, proper formation. But once there's this bilbul, the disruption of the tzura, because of its fragility, it just loses its, you know, disintegrate, lost its tzura, lost its appearance, lost its tumah. And that would be Rav Shimon's reason for being matar. Amar li Rabbi Yechon Rish Lakish. How do you know that when a mace lost its tzura, does it lose its tumah? Mace shenis bal b'tzuras minon. How do we know the Torah? Ilema. Is it mihadam Rav Shimon? Is it because Rav Shimon telling us, Amar b'tzal mit elob, Amar b'tzal mit elob, Amar b'tzal mit elob, Mace shenifra, nisrab. Oh, a mace which was burnt, but his, you know, skeleton, the guf, Rashi says, the formation is still intact, meaning the ashes were not dispersed, so it's still sitting intact as it was. Tome, it gives off tome. In fact, it was a story, Masa Hoya, v'timu lepsachem g'doylem, turn to the next time, v'tira loy, z'yihar loy psachem tan. So this actually relates to a different halacha, Tumas Pesach. Some say halacha meshem esina, some say it's in Rabbanon. Well, there's a mace inside a house, so if there are doorways, we assume that the mace will be taken out. It will stay there forever. It'll be taken out. The halacha is that those openings, those psachim, which are large-sized psachim, suitable for transportation of a mace through them, needs to be at least 4 by 4 tefach, So in that opening, there's tumah, because it's considered the exit route of the mace. So even though the mace is not there yet, the Pesach has tumah. And that's only because it's a full mace. Suppose it's not a full mace. Then, even smaller openings are have tumah, because if it's not a full mace, then it can be carried out through any window, any even a small sized, you know, exit route. So I have a story about a mace who was still intact, even though it was in burned state, but it was still intact. So they considered the large opening, the large window, the large door, as being tummy, as per the exit route of that mace. But the small, you know, openings were discounted from the tomb because it's a full mace, which is not meant to be carried out, you know, it's not anticipated to be carried out through the small openings. Rebbechem continues. Okay, so you're going to allude from this halacha. Time the shelah kayemis. Why do we apply, you know, tumah to the psachim? Because the shelah, the formation, is still intact. Halavach, but otherwise tohar. The mace will become tohar. So if it's disrupted, it loses its tumah. So you're concluding from here that at times when you need a full mace, it has to be fully intact. Adarabba, says Rabbi Yechon, if anything, the other way around, doik minol ha'gisa, you can infer the other way around. Infer like me, that even if it's not in its original formation, it's less tumah, and it may be even worse off than before. Why? Shulda kayemis, if the structure is still intact, only over there, the tehar lipsachim kan, only over there. They said, well, the big openings consider the exit route of the large-sized intact maze, but these small openings are absolved. Because a large maze through small openings? No. Halavachi, but otherwise, if the maze was disrupted, and no longer a single unit, then if anything, it's more tumah. Psachim tanim namim etam tmein. Even the small openings will be tamei. Why? Because you can take them out a little amount of time. Chalchan v'chad, because every opening, chazi, is suitable to transport through it a small piece of the mace. Take it one at a time. In any case, you're not taking them out as a single entity, a single unit. So bottom line is, you have no proof from here that a disrupted skeleton has no tumah. And likewise, in the case of the fetus, which has been disrupted through the process, who says there's no tumah? Why is that a reason to absolve it of tumah? Amar Rav Yehuda Ravashi, Rabbi Yochanan, Dama Kaman. Rabbi Yochanan says that if the burnt nace is no longer intact, it's still going to be a tame. Whose opinion is that? Whose shita is he lining up with? Rabbi Lazar, like Rabbi Yehuda, the snan, Eifes Rufin, Rabbi Lazar, Emeshir, Rabbi Reva. But as a whole, you have ashes from burnt people early, you know? Even though it's not a full mace, just a roiva kav, right, which is a shear attributed to the bones of a mace. In any case, it's about quantity. It's not about skeleton. It's not about formation of a mace. So he holds that the afer is still metam, even though it's not part of a, you know, intact entity. Okay, in any case, there was a differing opinion, with the law, right, Rish Lakish, that the burnt mace is only metami when he's fully intact. How could you have that? Hechidami, mace shenisraf v'shildekayim. Let's give an example of a mace that was burnt, was still intact. On my bike, you're going, sure, sir, I'll grab a katavli, it was burned on the thick leather mat. So he's still intact, so nothing else is mixed in, right? Rav Amak, you're going, sure, sir, I'll grab a pudorim, he was burnt on some sort of stone structure. No, he was never really fully burnt. He was charred. In which case, he's still fully intact. Okay, let's look at Chazora. We spoke about the Shulya, who came way after the Vlad and still attributed to the Vlad, even 20, 30 days later. We spoke about twins born about a month apart, and we have that unique story of 3 months apart. Yehuda v'Chizkiya sitting in the Beis Medrash. By the way, Tesis asks, yesterday he says that a twin doesn't linger. A twin is born immediately after the first one. He says that we have a story here where it actually happens. He says it's not common. Right? So unless we know for a fact, we assume it didn't happen because the assumption is that the twins are born soon after. Okay, then we shift it over to the question of the Shulya. Shulya Bebayis Habayis Tomei, that's the Tanakama Shita, Shem disagrees. And ultimately we have two reasons, either Bita Baroiv, or because the Vlad, his Tzura was disrupted, his Babel Tzurasa, in which case it loses its Tuma, similar to the case of the Meish, Shenisraf, which is only a Tomei, if it maintains its original, the integrity of its original structure. All the best to you, and that's Lacharach.